Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah.
Welcome to the USC Triple Double Podcast, and we've got, I guess, a kind of breaking news edition here, Connor. I'm Shotgun, your host, Shotgun Spratling, along with my dynamic co-host, Connor Morissette, Mr. Triple Double himself. Connor, big news coming out of USC today. The Trojans have a new men's basketball coach in Eric Musselman. Let's start there. First initial reaction. We kind of were hearing things. We finally were able to, we're piecing it together, you know, between me, between you, Chris, Ryan, everyone's kind of getting different sources telling us different things. And we're kind of hearing it's all leaning towards Eric Musselman. When it started to be more and more clear that that was going to be the case for USC and that was going to be the hire, what were your thoughts on that for USC?
Yeah, really happy with the hire for sure. The must bus is coming west, and I feel like he was always kind of the leader in the clubhouse to get the job. And sometimes these searches, it can kind of wind. And one time one guy looks like, oh, he's going to get it. And then a couple days go by or a couple hours go by sometimes. And it's like, oh, maybe not. But from the beginning, felt pretty good about Musselman. He was in our original hot list. I said on the show last week, he'd be my ideal candidate. So I don't know if he's a guy who stays for like 10, 15 years. He is in his upper 50s, I think. But he's a guy who's going to recruit really well. He knows the transfer portal really well. If you just look at what he's done at Arkansas, we can get into it a little bit. I think he's going to give some juice and some buzz to a USC program coming off a year that they really struggled, which is significant. So I'm in on the hire. I'm really excited about it. And I think Jen Cohen and USC got a good one.
It will be interesting to see the duration of his tenure at USC. So far in his coaching path, you know, especially as a head coach, the last couple stops have been relatively brief, you know, especially compared if you look at, you know, Andy Enfield being at USC for 11 seasons. Musselman's been there, I think it was 4 or 5 years at Nevada, 5 years at Arkansas. And from talking to people in the industry, he wears on people and he kind of grates people and breaks them down and kind of turns things over. So you look at his roster, actually doing a piece in, he's had the 5 years he was at Arkansas, he had 52 players. Now, is that a lot? Is that a little? I mean, the average over, you know, 10 players per season is pretty significant because you usually should have some returners along the way. USC during that same time period had 40 and had, I believe it was 22 of those were guys that were there for multiple years compared to only 16 in Arkansas. He had only six guys that were there for 3 years or more during that stretch. Now, Again, it's a little bit different because it's the transfer era, it's the NIL era, but that's just a comparative there for you that guys come in and cycle in and out with him. And he gets the most out of teams, breaks it all down, comes back again. And that can be very, difficult on the people around the team, not just the roster itself, but, you know, that constant turnover that's going on that some people can't handle, other people seem to do really well with. So it'll be interesting to see how well that works at USC in a much different locale than Reno, a much different locale than Fayetteville, Arkansas, in Los Angeles. We'll see how well that works and how attractive this opportunity can be for future recruits and whatnot. But definitely one of the most accomplished coaches that was available on the market. I said last week, and I would still stand by it, that Jay Wright would be the guy I would have called 500 times. I would honestly try to make him change his phone number before. Just literally like, I'm going to get a restraining order if you do not quit calling me type of thing is how I would have gone after him, because he seems to be far and above anyone else. But then when you start looking at we'll say if that was not a realistic candidate, you start looking at the more realistic candidates, people that were available, people who are throwing their names out for different jobs. Musselman is at the top of the line as far as the accomplishments that he has achieved to go to Arkansas, a place that basically hadn't been to, I don't think they'd been to the second weekend or hadn't been, hadn't been into the Sweet 16, I think in 2 decades. You know, it'd been a long time since the Nolan Richardson era, Razorbacks. And in a three-year span, it takes us to 2 Elite 8s and a Sweet 16. USC fans would be thrilled with that 5-year run from Eric Musselman at USC. And then, if he moves on and goes somewhere else, I think USC fans would feel like the program is in a better spot. And so that's what you're looking for. Even if he's only here for 5 years, can it be a dynamic 5 years? And I think it definitely can be. And then would set you up for an opportunity to go hire someone else and, see what USC can be type of thing. Whereas just think back to when Andy Enfield took over and how low this program was at that time. I know they had a bad year this year and did not meet expectations. This program is nowhere near in the area of how poor they were when Andy Enfield took over and no one wanted the job. I don't even know if many people thought you could win at USC with the results that they had seen, in the recent years before that under Kevin O'Neill. So you got to give a ton of credit to Andy Enfield and his staff throughout the years for building this program where it is right now, to make it an attractive place for someone to leave an SEC school. And now Eric Musselman, grew up partially in San Diego. His mom is in San Diego. So there's some different things that are pulling him back to the West Coast. But for someone to leave an SEC job and come to USC, I think it was really big. So those are my initial thoughts on the Musselman hire. And I think it'll be interesting to see how it all works out and the personalities and all those things. And looking forward to seeing what should be a really intriguing run at the minimum.
For sure. A couple things you hit on there with the roster turnover. It did work really well for him for a while there with the 2 Elite 8s and then the Sweet 16. And then you get to a season like this for Eric Musselman at Arkansas, where it was similar to USC in a lot of ways. The expectations were definitely higher than what the team produced on the court, and the cupboard was kind of bare now that he's gone. So we've seen coaches really excel doing that, and Musselman's certainly part of that, but it can go south kind of quick. So I'm interested to see what lessons he's learned from this past season at Arkansas and how he applies that to USC. And then one other thing, Shotgun, that you mentioned, how he kind of wears on people a little bit. I've heard a couple stories from some people in the coaching community. There's some team managers, some assistants who have worked from him, and the experience hasn't been good. Let's say that. So the winning percentage speaks for itself. As a college coach, he's over 70%, over 700. He produces, he gets results. It's very impressive, but I think there's a reason he's been at schools for 5 years intervals. He kind of wears people down, and sometimes that can contribute to a guy not being in a place for a long time. Fans, I don't think, will care that much if he wears his assistants down as long as the team wins. So people listening to this might think, who cares? It's all about the wins. So I definitely subscribe to that as a fan. If my team's winning, I don't care if the coaches meet or nice. So I don't think really that matters in the short term. And right now, USC in the short term, I think looks good because Musselman has shown that he can rebuild a roster really quickly. I don't really know how good USC will be next year. They have to get a lot more players, and it already started with Josh Cohen, who's committed from UMass to Arkansas. He's flipped to USC, so they got someone on the board today. We're going to need a lot more progress in that regard because right now USC just doesn't have a lot of guys, so I'm excited to see what Musselman does.
Yeah, I was going through their media guys at Arkansas. I'm looking, and you know, in the 5 years that Musselman was there, they've had 26 people that are support staff slash assistant coaches. Now, you know, he had a couple guys. Anthony Ruta has been an assistant coach with him. It came with him from Nevada to Arkansas. So I wouldn't be surprised if he follows him to USC. He was there all 5 years. A couple more. Obviously, his son, Michael Musselman, is coming with him. It was a director of recruiting assistant this year. And there's been a couple guys, you know, like his head strength coach was the same all the entire time in Arkansas. He has a video coordinator that moved up to a different title, that'd been there all 5 years. But otherwise, a lot of two-year tenures. A lot of people made it 2 years and then were out, and that could be for a myriad of reasons. And these are positions everywhere from special assistant to the head coach, assistant director of operations, assistant director of basketball operations. So a lot of different titles in here. It's not just, hey, his assistant coaches are turning in and turning out every time, though he has had some assistant coaches stay with him for a year and then be gone. And, you know, from, you know, what we've talked to different coaches around, it's because he can be tough to work for. And now, does that come with pushing you constantly is what it sounds like? Yes. And so, you know, the area of concern there, like you said, fans aren't going to care if they're cycling through assistant coaches that they're winning. The area of concern there, though, is continuity and then losing players. Hey, your assistant has a great relationship with somebody. They're thinking about entering the transfer portal, and that assistant coach is leaving, so that makes the decision a lot easier for them, type of thing. Whereas the assistant coach that has a great relationship with them, if he's staying, he may be able to talk that player off the ledge as far as going to the transfer portal. And so that may make the roster continuity a little bit easier too. So that's the area of concern there. But again, if you're winning all the time, fans are not going to care, and we'll see how that goes you know, at USC and in the Big Ten. Whole new landscape is coming as far as, you know, dealing with travel, dealing with, you know, all these different things that are going on. So maybe that becomes easier for him working with assistants. Maybe that becomes whatever it may be. We'll see. All those things are things we're keeping an eye on. But like you said, building a roster will be the first thing he has to do. And that already started with, you know, the in the last 48 hours, I'm sure, when, you know, he's had these meetings with Jim Cohen, and signing the paper on Thursday was to say, all right, now let's get busy on building this roster. You mentioned the UMass transfer that was committed to Arkansas that has flipped his commitment. You also mentioned on the Peristyle, and for those who are not members, got to go sign up. There's a 50% off deal right now. You could get all this information. You have known about Eric Musselman probably a couple of days earlier than most people out there, because we've had, you know, insiders on the boards and stuff that have been mentioning him. And, you know, we were able to put it out there a little bit earlier before the national guys had it, you know, as far as it, that was going to be the deal, that was going to be what was happening. But you mentioned on the P of another player that's actually in Southern California that could be following Musselman as well, that was committed to Arkansas. So we'll see if those type things continue to follow as well.
How good does Isaiah Elohim have it? The Southern California native, he started at Heritage Christian, finished his high school career at Sierra Canyon. Instead of joining a rebuild all the way in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas, that's me to Arkansas, but all the way in Arkansas, he's joining a rebuild at USC now with the coach who recruited him. So he's staying home. He's a top 50 or 60 recruit in 2024. I do expect him to follow Eric Musselman to USC, so he won't be going far. Sometimes you got to get lucky in life, Shotgun, and I think Isaiah Elohim is definitely getting a little lucky with this move. L.A. instead of Arkansas, that would be amazing.
I mean, we'll see if that ends up being the case. You know, it seems like that might be the destination for him, and that'll be a building piece. Because USC currently, depending on how you want to look at the roster, you could look at the roster and say they don't have a guard on the roster right now. Because Isaiah Collier, we still expect him to go to the NBA, and Bronny James are the only two players that are guards on the roster that are not graduating slash out of eligibility slash entering the transfer portal. And then Bronny's status is up in the air. You know, there was the fake tweet about him going into the transfer portal and everybody jumped on it. And then suddenly I literally got three or four different sports books sending me emails about the odds of where Bronny James plays next season. I'm like, oh my, this is ridiculous. You know, a player that hasn't even entered the transfer portal to see the odds of where he will be playing next year, because he, there's talk of him entering the transfer portal. Now, his dad did not say that he was coming back to USC. He said that Bronny has some things he's got to figure out. And obviously that is the case, because he's going to wait and see who the coach hire was and then make the decision on, you know, we talked about it previously about whether he'll enter the draft, you know, the draft combine and stuff like that, and try to go through the process, and then whether he would come back to USC or not, or enter the transfer portal, all those type of things. So we'll see what happens with Bronny James, but he's really the only guard left on the roster right now. They have him and four forwards, and that's senior forward Harrison Hornery, junior, this will be their grades next year when they play, junior forward Vince Iwichukwu, sophomore Arrington Page, and then Brandon Gardner, who I believe will be a redshirt freshman next year. So four big men, all reserves, all that need a ton of playing time this offseason, that need to really develop, and one guard in Bronny James. So that means to me, if I'm Eric Musselman, you look at it and go, all right, I've got a blank slate. I've got a clean slate. I can take this team and this roster in any direction I want to, and I can sell every single player. There is immediate playing time, and there is a, quite possibly a starting spot waiting for you if you come to USC right now.
I wonder if Khalif Battle will follow Musselman. He entered the transfer portal today. He's a guard who was at Arkansas, started his career at Butler, then played at Temple for 3 years before joining the Razorbacks last year. I'm curious, though, Shotgun, if it's a situation where this is a guy who joined Arkansas, expected to make the tournament, have a good run, and sort of fell on his face a little bit. He had a fine season, but the team fell on its face. Does that make you lose trust in the coach and maybe he chooses to go somewhere else? I have no inside information on where Khalif Battle is going to end up, but I did think it was interesting he entered the transfer portal today. So he's certainly a contender to join USC. We'll see. Maybe I can ask around tomorrow at the press conference and just text some people, get some inside scoops on whether he will join Musselman at USC, because I feel like it could go one or two ways. And I think he could certainly help, because right now they have no guards. So Khalif Battle, that's another name, but we'll see what happens.
And that's a similar situation. You go, okay, how was the experience this year? You know, they didn't meet expectations, but then how was the experience outside of the wins, losses? And, you know, if your coach is constantly on you and it's a bad environment, as far as, you know, you're getting pushed all the time, you don't feel like, you know, it's deserving. If you're, you know, whatever it may be, it's the, you know, the grading personality of a head coach can be great to push you to a new level. Can also be enough to say, I don't want to be a part of that again, you know, when we didn't succeed this past year. So maybe he looks elsewhere. That all depends on how Khalif Battle kind of interpreted the season, and, you know, why he thought that the season did not go the way they anticipated it going. So, but there's big names out there. You know, USC can go in the portal and there are plenty of names, you know, they could go get. You know, it seems like the NIL situation is doing better for USC. So we'll see if they go out and, you know, can they go get a John L. Davis from Florida Atlantic? Can they go get, you know, Maxine Renault from Stanford? You know, who are they going to target in the transfer portal? That's going to be the really curious thing, I think, because, you know, how does – I think that Musselman from, you know, there's been some recruiting battles, USC versus Arkansas, the previous, you know, seasons with Andy Enfield versus Musselman. Someone like Jacob Walsh, who's now in the NBA, was someone that both programs were after pretty hot. But it's because they run similar, they want similar style players. They're looking for long, they're looking for length, they're looking for, you know, those athletic big men rather than, you know, your Zach Edey's in the middle. So I think you'll see similar roster construction as we've seen in the past with USC under Andy Enfield, as far as the body types and style they're going for. Now we'll see exactly what they go for. And, you know, maybe it's different this first season just because you got to take what you can get as you're trying to build a roster. And the fact that USC is about a week behind, you would say, on as far as the transfer portal and everything, just starting to see some of the, you know, bigger name players, higher rated players in our transfer portal rankings on 24/7 start to come off the board, including a big one that happened earlier on Thursday going cross town. Kobe Johnson, USC guard from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, brother obviously in the NBA, is going to head across town to play for Mick Cronin. I think it's a great fit for Kobe Johnson, but USC fans are not going to be happy to see him in baby blue next season when they see him. I think he'll definitely fit that Jalen Clark role that and Clark, you saw how his career took off under Mick Cronin, and I think the similar trajectory could happen for Kobe Johnson with him. But you know, he'll be used constantly. He'll be in the starting lineup, and he fits right into Mick Cronin's profile of defense first guys. So we'll see how that works out for him, but it will be definitely weird seeing Kobe Johnson in baby blue. I think
it will be weird, and it's just sort of shows how the times have changed. I mean, you look at football, Danton Lynn, the defensive coordinator at UCLA, joining USC, that's a little bit different, but then to have some players who are on UCLA follow him, I just think the times have changed a little bit, shotgun, and the fit and opportunity greatly outweighs the rivalry. And maybe it always has, but I think especially now, that difference is just massive in the era of the transfer portal. And at first, it was sort of jarring for me to see Kobe Johnson in that graphic of the light blue and the yellow, the UCLA jersey. I think I tweeted, wow, and that was my initial reaction when I saw it. It makes a lot of sense. The fit is really good, like you said, but it's jarring, and I think when we see some of these USC guys who are on UCLA and on the football team come out in the Cardinal and Gold in the fall, we'll have the same reaction.
Yeah, I think it's much less in this era. You're just not going to have people as bought into the rivalry in the same regard where, you know, you hate the opponent, you know, and you couldn't see yourself wearing those colors, whatever. It's a business decision. And I think his initial Instagram post, several USC players chimed in, you know, congratulating him, wishing him well. His parents chimed in, said, hey, this is a business decision, go get it, type of thing. So that's what it is. That's what all these players look at now, rather than, you know, it's much more about, okay, college is the step to get me into the NBA, to get me to my pro, rather than college is the destination. And, you know, I'm full force into, the rivalries and everything else. It's just not that way anymore. You know, but with so much movement, it lends itself to this is going to happen more and more. And you see someone like Kyle Ford. Kyle Ford goes in the transfer portal from USC. Kyle Ford was one of the guys that was pretty much hated on UCLA during his time at USC. Would make jokes and stuff about them on social media, if I remember correctly. Goes to UCLA, does not have a great year this year, is back in the transfer portal, and has been spotted at USC's campus and could be a potential to come back. So, like, that's unfathomable 30 years ago. Like, if you're asking a player from the 80s about something like that, they'd be like, what the – there's no way. I would never – like, they wouldn't allow it. And now it's like he's probably going to be, you know, welcome back with open arms, you know, because he'll fit a need for USC potentially. And, you know, the players – don't see it as something personal to them. They don't see it like, how could you dare go somewhere like that? Like, I mean, 30 years ago when I was in high school, we had a player transfer in a very similar situation, like to transfer to go to a baseball program. They had more eyeballs, have an opportunity to be seen by more recruiters and stuff. And we stopped talking to him. He's a good friend of ours. Did not talk to him for probably 5 years after that. And then you eventually mature at 23 or 24 and you go, okay, this is dumb. Why am I not talking to him? This was my good buddy before. But you don't see that anymore. And I think it starts with, you know, high school. You see kids transferring all the time. We see Sky Clark committed to UCLA as well. You know, they've hit the transfer portal hard. Sky Clark will be on his seventh school since he's come full circle, comes back to Southern California. From the last time he was in Southern California when he was at Heritage Academy or Heritage Christian in Northridge and four different high schools. And now this will be his third different college, I believe all in 7 years. I think it's seven schools in 7 years for him. But you know, when you hop around that much, how do you build that loyalty? How do you build that animosity towards an an opponent towards a rival, it doesn't really happen. So I think that you're going to see more and more of it, and it's just weird. It will be weird to see, see him. It wasn't necessarily just him wearing the UCLA colors. It was him throwing up the fours up in the photos. That was like, okay, that just looks weird to see in this photo for me.
I think the first comment on Twitter was a screenshot of him doing the fours down. So I thought that was funny. I just think too, Shotgun, overall, you look at the coaches in college sports, like, does Lincoln Riley hate UCLA? Did Chip Kelly hate USC? Maybe Chip Kelly's a bad example because he was at Oregon before, but did Andy Enfield really hate UCLA? And is Eric Musselman have a hatred for UCLA? I think with coaches moving around so much as well, that sort of plays into it. Jim Harbaugh, yep. Michigan, a Michigan man, that rivalry is so intense at Ohio State with Michigan. Like, that's sort of one where I could see, okay, if you transfer between those schools, then you're probably going to not get those Instagram comments from teammates saying business decision, good job. There's a lot more hate in that rivalry. I think with the USC-UCLA rivalry, while there used to be a lot of hate, maybe there is still some a little bit with the fans, with the players, with the coaches. It's just changed.
I mean, I think there is still a lot of hate with the rivalry, but you also have to look at it as, you know, Kobe Johnson grew up in Wisconsin. You know, he's had 3 years of this rivalry versus being ingrained in it. You know, if Miller Moss was to transfer, that would be a lot different, I think, just because grew up a Trojan fan. You know, he has hated UCLA since he was a kid type versus, you know, someone who comes in and gets ingrained into it. And, you know, it's Caleb Williams style. You know, Caleb Williams, how much does he really hate UCLA? How much does he really hate Texas? You know, and Caleb Williams definitely played into those rivalries a lot with his, you know, his horn down and all that type of stuff. But he's a kid from the East Coast. Like, how much did he know about those rivalries growing up, where it's ingrained? And the fact that, you know, there's as much movement as there is, and teams are recruiting as nationally as they are constantly, then I think you see less and less of it, and that's taken away. And that's also partly the case because of the expansion of conferences, and, you know, conferences used to be super regionalized, and all those type of things have played into it. But you see less and less hate, I guess you would say, than you would 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 100 years ago, when, you know, football players were dying on the field type of thing. So it is what it is, and we'll see how it continues to progress. And there will still be rivalry action for USC and UCLA when they go to the Big Ten, but now you're going to be playing a lot of different teams. And so do you get more friendly with the UCLA teams because, you know, they may be travel buddies and all that types? I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. It'll be a whole new era starting next year in the Big Ten. And for USC basketball, men's basketball, they'll be going into that era with a new head coach, Eric Musselman.
Great point by you. I think the recruiting landscape, the transfer portal, the changes in conferences, that all plays into the rivalries sort of dying a little bit. And it's not just the coaches. It's not just, oh, a kid nowadays doesn't care about the rivalry as much. There's so much more that goes into it. And I think it's just a commentary on college sports as a whole. It looks a hell of a lot different than it did. I know when my dad, growing up, Notre Dame fan, he hates USC. And now it's just, I think a lot of Notre Dame fans who are a younger generation, of course, they don't like USC, but you ask their parents and their grandparents, the hatred's a lot stronger.
And the hatred builds from on-field incidents too, and recruiting battles and all those type things. And I think you're seeing sometimes there's a little bit less crossover with some of the rivals that you have grown up facing. I mean, USC, UCLA, you look at football at least, and they haven't recruited the same player for a decade now. So I think that takes some of the punch out of it. You know, it's the on-field result once a year, but it's not also the recruiting win here and the recruiting win there. And, you know, that's what also builds into it as well. So there's a lot of the stuff that goes into it. It's a little bit less than it was. The Crosstown Showdown will always be a unique rivalry, especially with the fact that fans literally go to work and you sit beside someone who's, you know, you bring in your Cardinal gold, they wear their baby blue because on Saturday, you know, the teams are matching up. And, you know, on Monday, someone's going to be shit talking. So you want to be the one that can be able to do that. So you want your team to win. It's unique in you in Los Angeles that way, in the Crosstown Showdown. So it'll always hold a different vibe there. But That's a whole nother story. We can talk rivalries for days here. We could talk about Georgia, Georgia Tech from my growing up. We could talk. You know, what do you got up there in the frosty part of the world? You could talk what UMass and UMass Lowell. Is that what you're going with? What's your big rivalry there, Connor?
No, not that. It'd probably be hockey, honestly, with BU and BC, the bean pod. That's what jumps to me when you talk about college sports in the Northeast, just because it's so different up there. It's a pro sports town and in Boston. And like, who's BC's biggest rival? In football, like, Syracuse and BC both stink. So it's always they play a weekend and maybe one team scratching the surface to getting bowl eligible, but that's not a real rivalry. So I default to the college hockey where I'm from.
Your rivalry is New York. You guys hate New York in any and all aspects as far as pro sports go. So as a Bostonite, Boston fan, New England Patriots fan, you guys just all hate New York. So there's your big rivalry, and that one doesn't go away at all, because that regionalism carries on throughout. But we could talk all that. Like I said, we could talk rivalries all day. We're going to talk some more basketball though. But first, we're going to take our break, and then we're going to come back. We're talking about men's basketball this entire segment, Connor, and we got to talk about the women of Troy playing in the Sweet 16, playing the Elite Eight, and a disappointing finish to a outstanding special season for them that just happened this week. We haven't even talked about that this week because of the big news on the men's side, but we'll get into that when we come back from the break. Make sure you keep it locked here and then on uscfootball.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount+. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount+.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you put the triple-double or the basketball pod in the headline, because I didn't even mention this. We just went straight into everything, Connor. But any first-time listeners, if for some reason you just came to the show and you started listening and now you've gotten all the way to the break, any first-time listeners, the triple-double podcast is part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. This podcast is focused on the Trojan men and women of Troy basketball programs. Each week, we're breaking down the latest action, the latest news, And because of that, we got to break down. We just broke down the latest news for the men's side. We got to break down the latest action because the men have been done. Their season's been over for a while. The women of Troy were minutes away from heading to Cleveland right now. I would actually be in Cleveland right now if that was the case. The women of Troy, Lindsey Gottlieb's third season, have a remarkable season. They go 20. I think it's 29-6 was the final record. They play in the sweep through the opening rounds, hosted at the Galen Center. First time the Galen Center has hosted any NCAA tournament basketball games for the women. They make it to the Sweet 16. They play Baylor, a team that really pushed them. And they showed, I wrote about how they showed their team totality in that game in the fourth quarter where everyone contributed in a different way. And then they played UConn, and it felt like it was the exact opposite. All their role players didn't necessarily play their roles. Juju Watkins was really good. Mackenzie Forbes was really good. And then no one else wanted to score the basketball. So let's just go straight into our triple-double. Connor, what stood out to you? What were your three positives, your two negatives from the week of action for the women of Troy and going into the offseason now?
I'll start with the Baylor game and Juju in a game where she had that long field goal drought. She was just trying to figure things out on offense. And when the going got tough, she got to the foul line and made all those free throws and came up clutch in the fourth quarter. And we saw her do that earlier in the season when shots from the field weren't necessarily going down. She knew, hey, I'm still better than everyone just because my shot's up. I'm going to do what I got to do to get to the free throw line. And even though all the other role players did so well in that game too, I felt like at the end it came down to Juju getting to the line. So I wanted to shout her out. I think it's important, Shotgun, to make the Elite Eight and cement yourself as a top 10 team in the country. You make the Elite Eight, seven teams are going to go home disappointed. So USC, unfortunately, was one of those seven teams. But to get to that hurdle and to be a clear top 10 team after winning the Pac-12 tournament, that's awesome. No one can take that away from this group, which I think is really significant. And then one other thing on the Baylor game, the role players getting it done. Just like you said, Rhea Marshall was huge and Kayla Padilla was making shots and Mackenzie Forbes had her moments in that game. Unfortunately, against UConn, Juju couldn't hit a shot and Kayla Padilla had one nice three, but I think she had an air ball too. And she just didn't look like the Kayla Padilla that we saw in Pac-12 play. So that was frustrating. Credit to the role players for getting it done against Baylor, but they came up short against UConn. And we'll talk about that a little bit more here too.
Yeah, I forgot to get the scores here. USC beats Baylor 74-70, and that one was, you know, close throughout. USC had a lead and opened up, I think it was 11-point lead in the first half. And the third quarter, Baylor dominated. Baylor was a tougher team. They were more physical. And USC kind of, seemed like the season could be on the brink if they didn't turn things around. And they went out and did that. In the fourth quarter, they were down. Going into the fourth quarter, what was a Baylor run going in? I think it was 13-4 run going into the end of the third quarter. Fourth quarter, they take the lead right there at the end. Kayla Padilla comes out and breaks the scouting report. She does something she doesn't normally do, which is drive and then attack with a two. Kind of a leaning in, gets a foul and one, makes a bucket, 3-point play. Mackenzie Forbes follows with walks into a three. Six straight points for USC, and they're back on top. Okay, well, the game goes back and forth a little bit, and USC's down 64-61 with 4 minutes, a little bit over 4 minutes to go. They go on an 8-0 run. You actually extend it and say it was a 13-6 run to finish the game. Started with 8-0, and a lot of that was Juju Watkins. She had a big bucket in transition. She really struggled, scoring. But gets out in transition, one-on-two, she takes on the defense, scores, gets the foul, and that starts her scoring. I think it was 8 straight points that she scored for USC there. And Baylor stayed in it with a miracle three. They banked in a three to get within one, but USC kept hitting their free throws. They would get the ball to Juju, she would knock down the free throws, and then Rhea Marshall hits one late to kind of seal it, the last point of the game, to make it a two-possession game. USC walks away with a 74-70 win in that one. And in the UConn game, USC comes out hot. They fell behind initially, but then they go on I think it was an 8-0 run, but immediately UConn answers with a 9-0 run of their own. And that was the thing, is they gave up these long runs to UConn. That 9-0 run was actually part of, like, I think it was a 17 or a 19-7 run or something like that, or maybe less than 19-4 run. There was a 17-7 run at one point. And then the dagger, fourth quarter, Juju Watkins makes a bucket to put USC, you know, to bring them within a point, down 65-64. They've been trailing throughout the third quarter. You know, they were down by seven early in the quarter. They're down by one. Same situation, basically, as the Baylor game. In that game, there was 4:19 left. This one, there's 4:30 left, basically. They're down by one. UConn goes on 11-0 run. And in that run, Juju Watkins missed a couple of shots. Mackenzie Forbes missed a couple of shots. And no one was able to pick up. No one was able to get that big rebound and put back or something like that. USC does in the final minute. They got seven straight points because UConn's so thin, they couldn't make free throws. I think they were just exhausted. And so they were missing, bricking free throw after free throw. So USC gets seven straight points. You know, they're within, they have an opportunity to get it to, you know, they're at 5 point, down five. If they could get a stop or get a steal, get a big three. And could never get that big three. That was the thing. They got one three during that run from Mackenzie Forbes when they're down nine. But like when they got closer and closer, they needed someone to hit that clutch three, like we saw against UCLA in the double overtime win in the Pac-12 tournament. Like we saw in the Baylor game, you know, someone wanted to make a big, like we saw throughout the season, and they just didn't have it. And that's the difference when you're playing the Elite Eight. Like, you know, shots that fall down throughout the season just were not falling for USC. You mentioned Kayla Padilla. She had a rough game. She was 1-9 total, 1-7 for three. She wasn't the only one. Mackenzie Forbes hit five threes, but she took 15. You know, Juju Watkins had two really big threes over Paige Beckers, including to break the all-time record for a freshman Division I scoring record. And then she, the next time down, she hits another three to go over 900 points. The first freshman ever to score 900 points in the season. But she missed her other four. You know, she gets, at times she'll get into that groove and, you know, hit it. And that'll be the next thing for her game growing is extending her range a little bit, being able to consistently knock down the three better, because that's going to make her game that much more dangerous and give her more space to drive and all those type things. So, so that the game ends up being 80-73. UConn wins that one to advance to the Final Four, where they'll play Iowa, you know, who beat LSU. Dramatic numbers as far as the TV ratings and whatnot for both of those games. Like the UConn-USC game would have been the most watched women's basketball game outside the Final Four ever. Except it came on after, you know, Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese, and that game was far and away had bigger numbers. But otherwise, this was number two all time. So that tells you, one, the star power in the women's game right now, and also, you know, how women's basketball is rising. My triple, they took care of the ball in both of these games. They lost this game because they didn't make shots, but at least they didn't give the game away. They had 10 turnovers in the game, and it led to 17 points for UConn, so that was a big one. But only 10 turnovers. Now, you know, that just shows what UConn is capable of when they get out in transition and stuff. They were really good on, you know, taking advantage of USC's mistakes against Baylor. I think it was 9. So I had that one. And then my other two triple-double were just the overall season. What a run this was. This was fantastic. Look at all the people that are just engrossed in women's basketball right now at USC and are so excited for the future of the program and where it could go. And with Juju Watkins and the recruiting class, they come in. And the other one is, it was a terrific run this season. And it also goes with this. My third one is, the foundation is set. You've got two more years at least with Juju. And you know, you've got this great recruiting class. Now, can you add that piece or two that's going to take you to that next level, that toughness piece of a veteran big or something? You know, how is that going to work out? But the foundation is set for them to continue to grow on this. And, you know, it all starts with the fantastic season they had and whatnot.
Totally agree. What an incredible year. And just personally, I hadn't really paid much attention to women's college basketball prior to this season. And then watching all the USC games was awesome. I found myself really looking forward to all those Pac-12 games, especially the ones against Colorado and the one game against Stanford, which ended up being amazing. But when those top teams matched up in the Pac-12 this year, that was really fun. And it's not just USC too. I was all pumped up about that Iowa LSU game, and I thought shotgun the LSU UCLA game. That was one of my favorite basketball games, regardless of men or women, that I've watched in quite some time. I thought that was a phenomenal game. It was before USC Baylor, I believe, and I really enjoyed that one too. So I wanted to just overall, I know I'm one of a million people right now who's more into women's basketball than they used to be, but I feel like USC and doing this podcast with you has sort of been why I've been more engrossed in it and ingrained. And I, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, I'm doing this thing now. Oh, I don't want to be doing this, but I loved every minute of watching the Women of Troy and doing the show with you, man. I'm going to miss doing these shows.
We'll see if we bring it back next year. We'll see, you know, if we have the time and the energy to put into both of these teams. And hopefully, you know, like I said, the foundation is set. Now the men's side, we'll see how they start setting their foundation going into the next season as far as the roster and whatnot. But before we go, we got to talk about the negative. What were your two, your double portion of our triple-double, what were your two negatives from the women's this week, this season? What stood out to you overall?
I just have to jump to the UConn game. So it's never all about one player, but I just felt like in the Juju Watkins versus Paige Bueckers star power matchup, Paige had the better game, which is to be expected. Juju's a freshman. Paige is older and just has been in that program a little bit longer. In the fourth quarter, though, for Juju Watkins, I meant to go and look up the consecutive misses she had from the field in that fourth quarter, but it was just a lot of shots that didn't go in. And then on the other end, Paige Bueckers was hitting these threes from really deep. I think it's a learning experience for Juju. Certainly, this is what it takes in these big games to really get over the hump and win. So turning a negative into a positive, I think USC has the chance to do that. But I start there in the battle of the stars. Juju was outplayed, and hey, if she's a freshman, she'll learn from it. And I'm really excited to see what she'll do in the future because, of course, like you said, she set the all-time scoring record for a freshman. So it's not like she had a bad year by any stretch. And then I kind of feel like shotgun a little bit. It's really hard to get to the Elite Eight. And I wonder if, as the years go by, we'll look back at this game against an undermanned UConn team and think, oh, USC, that might have been the chance that they had to get to the Final Four. Hopefully that's not the case and they're able to win some Elite Eight games in the future with Juju and the great recruiting class they have in the future. But I felt like this was a matchup that USC really had a chance, even though they weren't favored to do some damage, because UConn, they really only play five players. They have a sixth who plays a little bit, but at the end there, like you said, the seven missed free throws, UConn sort of let it back in the game. They were exhausted. Paige Bueckers willed her team to that win, and Aaliyah Edwards had a great game too. But I feel like that's a UConn team that is beatable just because they've had so many injuries this year, and eventually the foul trouble is going to catch up to them. I mean, Nika Mule had four fouls halfway through the third quarter, and then she plays the rest of the game, and UConn dodged a big bullet with that, because if she goes out, then she's in a lot of trouble. So just the way the game unfolded with USC being within a point and how UConn, just the situation UConn was in with not having a lot of players and being tired, I felt like USC, they sort of let go of the rope a little bit. Stuff kind of crumbled. The moment might have gotten a little bit too big for them, which they were in these games in recent years, and it's a lot of new faces, so I get it. But we'll see how this ages going forward, because I did think that was a winnable game.
I think it's a great point, and I think this was the one time where Lindsey Gottlieb, I don't know that I would say she was outcoached, but I felt like she could have done a better job. You know, I just think that, one, they didn't get calls. That really hurt them. You know, I said this, I think, in the beginning of the third quarter. I was like, all right, UConn's in foul trouble. The refs are about to swallow their whistles because Gino Auriemma is all on them, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. Hall of Fame coaches end up getting their teams less calls. Not that they get more calls to, hey, okay, you're going to call this foul on my, you know, when my guy's driving, but they get less calls for their defenders. And that's what the elite coaches can do. And it felt like that. Juju drove into the lane several times and was looking for a foul, looking at the refs, like, what, how is that not a foul type of thing? And I felt like there was maybe some ways that they could have attacked UConn's defense a little bit differently that would have pressured certain players into potentially getting a foul. Now, again, it takes the refs calling that, but the fact that they end with Nika Mule having four fouls and she played all 40 minutes and she was in foul trouble for a good portion of the time. Aaliyah Edwards ends up with four. KK Arnold, who did sub out because of her foul trouble, she had four. But if you get one of those players, if you get particularly Mule, who had 8 assists in this game, if you get her and hit 2 clutch free throws late, if you get her to foul out, how does that change? How does this, you know? And you mentioned Juju Watkins, you know, she had 29 points in this game, 10 rebounds. Incredible game for her, but she did finish 9 out of 25. In the fourth quarter, she had 13 points, but it was on 4-10 shooting. And that critical stretch where USC climbed back in it, that little area, the middle of the quarter, she did miss 5 consecutive shots. That's what you were mentioning. And unfortunately for her, the role players didn't play their roles. You know, if Kayla Padilla knocks down a 3 during that period, then it lessens that. You know, if Caitlin Davis gets a putback, you know, she was only 1 of 6 in the game. Remember about a month ago, I think it was, we were talking about how she's shooting like 80% from the field. Like every time she attempts a shot, it's going in, and she didn't shoot very well. And then, you know, Rhea Marshall, like, we wanted her to be more aggressive, especially going against Aaliyah Edwards, like force Aaliyah Edwards to block your shot a couple times, especially with her being in foul trouble, like those type of things where I felt like maybe USC could have been put in different sets to try to attack certain players. I don't know, but you know, there was opportunities there. It felt like to attack the lack of depth that UConn had, to push the tempo maybe some more. And I know maybe USC was trying to conserve energy for Juju Watkins and, you know, for some of their players as well, but maybe use the bench a little bit more to try to press, you know, get Kayla Williams in there to be on the ball constantly, hounding someone from end to end, just to wear someone down, because UConn was having to conserve energy and you saw the effect of it at the end of the game. And USC nearly made a run that last minute because of it. So there's things they could have done there. My other negative, though, is just they've got a big rebuild. Even with Juju returning, this is going to be a big rebuild, and there are going to be huge expectations. And hopefully it's not USC football this past year. Hopefully it's not USC basketball, men's basketball this year, and a little bit so far baseball this year, where huge season and then big expectations going into that next year, and it just falls flat on its face. There will be big expectations with Juju returning, and there's a lot of talent coming in. But as Beth Burns has said, or I think Lindsay Gottlieb said in one of her press conferences, is we got to get back to work. You know, we got to get back to coaching, because last year we had all the Ivy League kids are coming in, they're fifth year players. They know what to do. Now you got babies coming in with all these 18-year-olds coming. So they got to go get back to coaching. It's going to be a much more aggressive offseason of work and stuff to, you know, get everyone to know what they do, know what they're supposed to do, and all those type of things that those Ivy League players kind of covered up or were already, you know, ahead of the curve and those type of things. Any final thoughts on the women's basketball season there, though, Connor? I mean, it was such a tremendous run. I think it was 29-6 is what they finished. They will see where they finish in the AP poll, the final polls that come out. They entered the NCAA tournament at number 3. I can't imagine them being any farther than 6. You know, if someone goes just by, oh, these are the final 4, you know, who are you going to put above them? I have a hard time saying that you look at any other team that lost in the Elite 8 and go, they're definitely better than USC. And if USC was already ranked ahead of them, so, you know, they probably finished 5, but somewhere between 4 and 6, but an outstanding season and a great building block for them. What are your final takeaways from this season?
Well, it's just fun to go through the schedule. I mean, you were at the first game against Ohio State, and they were already on the map with Juju, but beating a team that has had so much success historically and was ranked so high to open the year, that kind of got people excited. And then in the Bahamas, Juju has that great finish against Penn State. USC wins by a point. The first UCLA game doesn't go their way, but then they bounce back against Oregon State at home and win. I remember that game really well. A couple games later, they beat UCLA at home, and that sort of really got the momentum going. I guess maybe that was premature, but I think big picture, that got the momentum going, because they did lose their next 2 games after that. What really got the momentum going was Juju's 51 points against Stanford. And remember, Shotgun, before that game, we had Lindsay Gottlieb on, and she talked about how angry she was. And I think that kind of changed some things. Those 2 losses to Utah, Colorado, and then losing to Washington at home, that sort of sparked Lindsay Gottlieb, and USC goes on this epic run where they only lose 1 other time outside of that UConn game. So many highlights. The Colorado game at home where Juju has the huge second half and just the offensive explosion. That was awesome. The double overtime Arizona game on the road where USC does it without Juju Watkins, winning the Pac-12 tournament, beating UCLA in the semifinals. Got to pat myself on the back. I said whoever won that game would win the tournament, and it ended up being USC. So I think looking back on this season, the start of this really great run for USC women's basketball, there have been so many highlights, and I think that's my biggest takeaway. It wasn't just, oh, they won this big game and this happened. To be number three in the country like they were for the first time since, I think, Cheryl Miller, and to get to the Elite Eight, to have the team that's so good, you're going to have a lot of these really, really highs, and it's awesome to look back at all the big highs that USC had because it's been such a fun season. And I know I'm not the only one who's really excited for next year, too.
Ton of bright spots in this season. Unfortunately, there weren't more of them on national television, so everyone could participate and watch instead of just being on the Pac-12 network. That'll be different next year. Again, going to the Big Ten will be much different. The opponents they're facing, opponents will have to learn about Juju for the first time again. So that'll give her a little bit of an advantage next year going into that versus facing all the same teams. Let's still look real quick at her ledger for the season. Her trophy case, someone like, you got to get a carpenter out to the house. You know, we need like a sliding trophy case that you can pull doors and other things will pop up, because WBCA Freshman of the Year on Wednesday, she was named that. She's already been Freshman of the Year for USBWA, the ESPN, the Athletic. She was the Pac-12 Conference Freshman of the Year. She's one of five freshmen ever to be named an Associated Press First Team All-American. She has multiple All-American honors from the Wooden Award, the Athletic, ESPN, U.S. Basketball Writers Association, Sporting News. Not too shabby for a player that wasn't even picked preseason to be All-Conference. Couldn't even make the All-Pac-12 team before the season. Instead, she goes and breaks the all-time scoring record at USC. She breaks several of Cheryl Miller's records. She breaks the all-time record for 30-point games in a USC season. The most by a freshman, 30-point games, breaking the Caitlin Clark record. The 51-point game was still the most points by any women's basketball player all season, maybe even men's basketball player. I don't know if anyone had 51. She had 42 at home against Colorado. That's the most by a USC player, men or woman in the Galen Center history. So just an amazing season. And if it wasn't for Caitlin Clark, there'd be a good chance she'd win a lot of Player of the Year awards as well. So an outstanding season. Had to give her flowers there. She was phenomenal. And the way she handled it all was exceptional. In our Juze section, we always do. Just, she was outstanding. She handled everything with grace, but it really stood out to me the end of that game. The end of the UConn game. Normally it's the seniors that are crying and the freshmen, you know, kind of pat them on the back and say, you know, whatever, we'll get back here type of thing. That's the mentality. And instead she was crying, and fifth year senior India Otto had her arm around her. And, you know, she tried to talk in the post game about the team and whatnot. And she just started choking up and tearing up. That stood out to me, to shows how much she cares and how much she has turned around basketball scene in Los Angeles, really. I mean, UCLA being good really helps to it because you have the rivalry aspect, but she is a one-woman show, and everyone came out from all the celebrities. Travis Scott was on campus today at USC, and he was there with Juju. So she was there, you know, as an ambassador, I guess, of the new line of clothing or whatever they were doing. So she came out to talk to the women, to the football team today. Like, how many women's basketball players over the course of USC women's basketball history have been like, hey, come out to football practice and talk to the team? Cheryl Miller might be one of those. I don't know. She used to play pickup games with the football players and stuff during the offseason. I think that's actually how she got hurt. But just a phenomenal freshman season. Freshman. She got at least two more years, if not three more, at USC. It's going to be a fun ride.
Truly incredible. And it's the Stanford game that I will just never forget.
Yep.
As long as I live. I mean, people know the stakes, but Stanford and the history and best team in the Pac-12 at Stanford, and to score 51 points, you know, people try to poke holes and you try to have like a hot take about something, but there's no possible rationale for trying to say something negative about that performance. All the odds were against her. USC was not in a good spot. And 51 points, I'm going to put the team on my back. I think that really got the role players to buy in a little bit too, because if they lose that game against Stanford, then maybe confidence is different. And I think that game really changed everything. So that's the one that always will stick with me.
Yep. Coming off the loss to Washington and going to Stanford, a place that's a house of horrors for USC that never basically hadn't won in like 20 years. Just an amazing performance. Probably the best single college basketball performance I've ever seen. So disappointed we weren't there in person to get to cover it, but we did get a chance to cover early in the season. You got a chance to cover some of the middle of the season games, and then we got a chance for the postseason. So that was really cool. And look forward to seeing where this program will go. Looking forward to seeing where the men's program will go as well. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. Please help us out by liking, sharing, subscribing. Leave us that 5-star review on your podcast listening platform. We always welcome your feedback, your comments, your questions at podcast@uscfootball.com. Ugh, I gotta get out of there, Connor. Any final thoughts, Connor, on this season where there's been a ton of change from the previous year to where we're at currently, you know, as far as where the program is at for both of them? The staff is completely gone for the men's. Did want to throw that out there. Andy Enfield has taken the SMU job. He's also taken the entire staff, I've been told. I know it's been put out there that Chris Capco is going to be his associate coach, but the entire staff is going with him. So we'll see who Eric Musselman brings in from his staff, who he brings over from Arkansas. We'll see all those things as well. But anything, final thought from you on this season as we wrap up this 2023-2024 season, Connor?
Fascinating. I think in my wildest dreams, if you take me back to November, you tell me the women are going to make the Elite Eight, I'd probably say, I don't think that's going to happen. You tell me Andy Enfield isn't going to be the coach a year from now, I'd say that's definitely not going to happen. So it goes to show how unpredictable sports are. I'm really excited for the future of both programs. We'll see what the men do in the transfer portal and what Eric Musselman does hiring his staff. And then the big question on the women's side is how quickly can that great freshman class adjust, get up to speed, and can that be a top 10 team for sure next season, or will the freshmen have some growing pains? So those are my two end of the year sort of questions. And I'm excited though. I think it's a really fun time to be at USC with what's going on at the end with the NIL for every sport. And the football program seems to be trending in the right direction. The basketball teams are certainly trending in the right direction. It's a fun time to be doing this. So I'm definitely thankful.
USC's women's, they're, transfer portal pickups last year were huge. We'll see what one or two key additions they try to make this year to add to the roster as well, to add to that big freshman class coming in. And does that mean that someone, you know, gets nudged out? Is anyone looking for more playing time off that bench type of thing? We'll see all those things going forward. You know, we saw Haley Van Lith go into the transfer portal. Can USC find a point guard, or are they going to turn it over to their freshman? Do they look for a big? You know, I thought it was interesting watching that LSU-Iowa game, seeing Anissa Murrow, have some big buckets, and she was down to USC and LSU making that decision. So I kind of wondered at the time, like, I wonder what USC would look like if she was an option down low for them, you know, as more of a scoring threat than what they've gotten out of Rhea Marshall, Caitlin Davis, or Clarice Akinwafu. So we'll see if they try to go get something like that. But that's going to wrap it up. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you all for listening throughout this season. It's been a fun ride. But most of all, thank you to my co-host, Connor Morissette, Mr. Triple Double, for being along for this ride with me. Hopefully, we will be able to join you guys at different time during the off season. Hopefully we'll get some of the coaches on to talk about the off season and whatnot at some point. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast.